The Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability will now come to order. Today's subject matter will be state facility closure hearing for the Toomey Park Mental Health Center. We will begin with the governor's office, the governor being represented by Michael Gelder, the senior policy advisor. Also, he'll be joined with the Illinois Department of Human Services with Dr. Deborah Ferguson, who's the senior deputy director, Mark Doyle, transition of care manager, and Bob Brock, who's their budget director.
Mr. Kessler.
Please call the roll.
Representative Bevick, Senator Frericks, Senator Murphy, Representative Nickerts,
yep.
Representative Poe, Representative Riley,
yes.
Senator Schmidt, Senator Schoenberg, Senator Severson, Senator Trotter,
here.
Representative Tryon.
Also joining us are other elected officials from throughout the state. We have Representative Creswick, Representative Thaddeus Jones, Representative Cunningham, and Representative Castle. Closer.
Can you
guys hear me out there? Just a few ground rules. We do have a timer so that everyone that it's being done, not to cut you off, but just so everyone can get an opportunity to speak. The timer, you'll hear the buzzer. When it goes off, it's set for 2 minutes. There will be some exceptions that we will go longer, but please try to adhere to the buzzer. To begin with, Mr. Gelder.
Thank you very much. Ooh, that's very live. Thank you very much, Senator, and members of the commission. Again, I want to express to you our deep appreciation and our gratitude for the work that you're doing. You are helping the state through a constitutional process that is important and necessary to help the state deliver services and meet its commitments to the citizens of the state while living within its financial means. And we know you are dealing with some very challenging issues, as are we in the executive branch, and we continue to want to work with you as closely as possible to help us reach the best decisions and the best conclusion for the state's taxpayers and for the state's residents who depend on the services that we provide. We know that the issue before you today, the Tinley Park Mental Health Center, is one of those very challenging issues. It's a facility that has existed for a long time and provides a high level of quality care to people with serious mental illness and people with mental health problems who are in a crisis. We, in recommending, as the governor did in last fall, and then again in the budget address this year, that Tinley Park close in no way denigrates or challenges in any way the work that has been done out here by the hardworking staff and by the community here who support those staff, their families, and everybody else involved in delivering this care. We know it's very challenging work, and we deeply appreciate it. But we also know that we, like everything in life and in government, change is inevitable. And in this case, we think we have recommended something that is supported by the evidence about the way we can best deliver care to people with mental illness, and the best way we can to finance that care. And for those reasons, we have recommended as we did before, as I said, the closure of Tinley Park. We are not looking at Tinley Park in a vacuum. The Tinley Park is one of several facilities that the governor has recommended be closed. We're in the process of engaging in that effort along with other members of the executive branch, departments that you'll hear from shortly. But we are confident that the facility closure effort that is taking up a lot of your time is one that will pay dividends to us as citizens of the state in enabling us to provide quality care in a more cost-effective manner in the most community-integrated and least restricted settings possible, which is what we believe our mandate is from the federal government and from court decisions interpreting laws that have been part of our country's history now for a long time, including the Americans with Disabilities Act. We appreciate the additional funding that the General Assembly provided us in November, which enabled us to keep Tinley Park open throughout fiscal year 12, that we have another 2.5 months left of. We did not have to pursue an urgent, immediate closing as had been funded initially by the General Assembly in your budget that you passed last May. And for that reason, we're able to come back to you with a plan that has many of the elements that for which we were criticized in the fall of not including at the time. Primarily one of taking a reasonable amount of time to develop a plan and to implement that plan before the facility was closed. But as you addressed that issue in November with reallocation of funding, we're able to keep Tinley open through June 30th and are embarking on the plan that you'll be hearing about in just another few seconds. So I want to thank you. I don't want to take up too much time because I think the value of today's hearing is for you to hear from the people involved in implementing the plan to provide services to people who have been patients at Tinley in more appropriate settings, and we'll be happy to answer your questions about the plan or about the governor's motivation or interest in doing this. But please, as you hear the plan and hear the comments, recognize that we are we understand how challenging this is. We understand the deep emotional commitment that people here in this community have. We're respectful of that, but yet we think that charging the executive branch as it is, the governor, with making those tough decisions, that we have made the decision that is in the best interest of the state, the taxpayers, and the people who depend on us for services. So let me turn it over now to Deborah Ferguson from the Division of Mental Health in the Department of Human Services.
Good afternoon. On behalf of Director Lauren Jones, thank you for this opportunity to provide an update on the plan for rebalancing Tinley Park Mental Health Center and Region 1 South. Since the February 7th CAHCFA hearing, the Division of Mental Health, in collaboration with both state and community partners, has done a considerable amount of work further developing, refining, and advancing our plan for rebalancing of state-funded mental health services delivery in the region. Today, Tinley Park has a census of 45. In FY11, there were 1,905 admissions, and in the first two quarters of FY12, there have been 694 admissions. All of the persons admitted in FY12 have been uninsured. Approximately 98% of those admitted to Tinley Park are referred by local hospital emergency departments. 17% are experiencing homelessness. As I mentioned in my previous testimony, the majority of those admitted have co-occurring substance use disorders, and with 24% having a primary diagnosis of substance abuse and no major mental illness. There are 165 total staff currently employed at Tinley Park, 147 in direct care, service, or trades positions, and 18 in management or administration. Consistent with the plan to close Tinley Park in early July 2012, on April 5th, layoff notices were issued to affected employees at Tinley Park and DHS employees in Cook County. Additionally, the DHS Bureau of Training and Support Services has been asked again to provide support services to Tinley employees, including but not limited to meetings with staff, review of available EAP PSP services, review of retirement and benefit options, and strategies for managing stress. Also, the Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity will be meeting with staff and, in collaboration with Cook County Works, will offer information on job training programs, job opportunities, and job-related resources. As part of the plan for Region 1 South rebalancing, the Division of Mental Health will invest $9.8 million in the community to support mental health treatment services previously provided by Tinley Park Mental Health Center. The foundation of the Community Reinvestment Plan is an enhanced and expanded crisis system focused on providing psychiatric emergency response and supports to hospital emergency departments in the region. In addition to the purchase of acute inpatient capacity in the region, we are also soliciting proposals for new service models to include crisis outreach, brief observation units, crisis residential, and substance abuse residential services, supplemented with access to psychiatry, medication, and transportation. Through the purchase of acute inpatient capacity in Region 1 Central, capacity at Madden Mental Health Center will be maximized in order to continue to provide a state-operated hospital safety net for admissions from the Region 1 South area. The ongoing evolution of this plan was organized under the Mental Health Rebalancing Advisory Workgroup, introduced at the last COTSA hearing. Briefly, this workgroup is co-chaired by Director Jones and Mark Doyle from the Governor's Office and is organized into six subcommittees. These are hospital engagement, service models and innovations, community education and support, service financing and payment methodology, system performance and outcome assessment, and messaging, media, and legislative liaison. With the exception of the system performance and outcome subcommittee, all are co-chaired by community partners with the experience and expertise in the specific area of focus. The plan reflects their input, experience, and recommendations for a regional, community-based mental health service delivery system that is flexible, comprehensive, and responsive to the needs of the Region 1 South community. These subcommittees and internal DMH rebalancing work groups have convened over a dozen meetings in the last several months, analyzing data, reviewing service models, and obtaining feedback from community partners on how the plan could be strengthened and enhanced. Central among these were clinical focus groups that analyzed the 10 most frequent diagnostic presentations to Tinley Park and recommended those services necessary to avert admission and those services necessary for stabilization in the community. The results of those clinical focus groups revealed that slightly more than 50% of individuals did not meet criteria for inpatient care and, in fact, could be better served with an array of community-based services to include intensive outpatient services, substance use-specific services, and brief observation and then linkage to intensive outpatient services. The results of this clinical focus group, coupled with that of the DMH internal group, and the input from the Service Models and Innovation Subcommittee, developed the specific plan elements which constitute the TIMI Region 1 South Rebalancing Plan. Based on these data and the input and guidance from the community stakeholders, a request for information, RFI, was developed and issued on April 4th, and you have a copy of that RFI today. This RFI invites existing DMH and DASA community providers to apply to offer one or more of the elements of the plan and encourages provider collaboration to promote system integration and coordinated care. Responses are due April 20th and will be reviewed by DMH community system experts. This is all in an effort to fulfill Director Jones's commitment to have funding available to community partners in May. This is in order to provide community partners with sufficient organizational planning and training time to be fully operational in July. The development and refinement of the TIMI Region 1 South Rebalancing Plan has been a data-driven process enriched by input and collaboration of community and regional experts. The structure and these subcommittees will continue to meet after the closure to ensure that the needs of individuals previously served by Tinley Park are met in a timely, comprehensive, and recovery-focused manner. The Division of Mental Health is grateful for these collaborations in the service of promoting community-based care in Region 1 South. Thank you very much, and I'll turn it over now to Mr. Mark Doyle from the Governor's Office.
I know that time is of the essence here, and so I think Dr. Ferguson has covered all the highlights of what's happened since the last time we got together and met, so I'm going to turn it over to... No? Okay, then we'll just open up right to questions.
Please add Senator Frerichs to the roll. Questions from the members? Okay, first we have a Representative Rowley and Representative Coulson.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. Here we are again. When did the RFI go out?
The RFI was published on the website on April 4th.
On April 4th. Okay. And so information is due back, is that the 16th or the 20th?
We originally asked for it back on the 16th, Representative Riley, but it seemed like it didn't provide sufficient time for people interested in submitting proposals to do that. So we extended the deadline to April 20th. And then later this week, we'll be offering a technical assistance call for individuals who have questions about the RFI to call in and talk to members of DMH.
I mean, you know, it's an RFI. Wouldn't you say, I mean, some people might say that essentially the 20th wouldn't be enough time. Tell me something about the decision-making process with regard to setting that date.
Well, Director Jones has made the commitment to community providers to try and have funding available to them in May. And sort of backing out from a May disbursement day, we had a very short timeline to get from the RFI to actually issuing contracts. So we really feel like it's important to provide the providers with sufficient time to do whatever training and organizational changes they may need to do between May and July so that they're fully operational at the time when Tinley closes.
But again, it just seems like the gravity of what's happening here, that there would have been a little bit more time afforded. Now, there wasn't, but you know, I just wanted to make that that point. When was the last time we got together? The last COGFA hearing?
Well, the last COGFA hearing was on February 7th, but I think you and I met after that.
Yeah, I want to say it was close to the end of February. You and I, you didn't meet with the rest of the members of COGFA?
Well, we had, we offered two times to, for members of COGFA who were available to meet with Mr. Doyle and myself and ask questions about the plans. And I believe that was February 27th and 28th, if I'm not mistaken.
Something like that. Well, you know, I don't know about, you know, my colleagues. There was an opportunity. You know, I thought that you met with everyone. Maybe you didn't, but there was an opportunity to meet, I guess, to go over, you know, any questions we may have had. Maybe some of us met with you, maybe some of us didn't. But again, I would ask, like I asked before, what's really changed since then? Has anything changed in terms of how you plan on making this transition? Has anything been extended? You know, we get a lot of information often on the days of the hearings, but you know, I mean, you can make it, you know, clear in terms of, are you still trying to meet this very ambitious and some people would say kind of a dangerous process, or has anything changed in your ideas? And this is for anybody, since we last, I guess, officially met together.
Well, the first thing that I would say that's changed, Representative Riley, is that we've had significant numbers of meetings with community providers and stakeholders and advocates and trade associations, and their input has informed the further development and refinement of our plan and has helped us develop the RFI that we issued last week. I'd agree with you that the timeline that we're on is an aggressive one, but I think that we are well positioned to accomplish what we need to accomplish by July 1st in a safe, collaborative, and comprehensive way.
Are we ready at this point, especially since there's an RFI, to be a little bit more forthcoming? Because, you know, that was a bone of contention with me, would be a bone of contention with anyone, where there's some sort of embargo on the facilities and the institutions that you're actually dealing with. For the life of me, and, you know, we all are fairly bright folks, I just really can't understand the reason why a facility wouldn't want, I mean, it's almost like a gag order or something. You know, so are you ready to say who you've been meeting with and so on, or at least, you know, put something out?
Certainly, and I believe if you look on page 40 of the RFI, there's a full listing of the participants. I believe it's 133 different individuals representing 72 hospitals, community organizations, trades, and advocacy groups.
Yeah.
Okay, so these are the people who you've been talking to and so forth?
Correct.
All right. Okay.
You know, I would just underscore that I think that listing is a very comprehensive list of the entities that have shown an interest and that we would like to see engaged in the process of providing services in this community. And we have, I think, very closely followed your expectations in making sure that the plan that we're implementing is informed by the entities and organizations that know this community the best.
So they were all aware of this, or does your statement sort of say that, well, some of them may not have been aware, but we'd like to try to partner with them going forward?
The people that are listed in there are people who attended and participated and collaborated with us on the various subcommittees and the development of the RFI, looking at our data, helping us analyze the data, recommend community needs and service packages, and developing the basis, the foundation for the RFI. So they were not only present, they were our partners in the development and evolution of our plan going forward.
Okay. Now, you still plan on, you talked about, the redistribution of dollars and so forth. There was a figure, $9.8 million. You still plan on having the cost savings that you've always said that you would have by virtue of closing the facility or not? Because it seems like, in your plan, you're expending dollars also. So, are we going? If you go along with it, are we actually going to see the cost savings that that you purported to have?
Our budget numbers haven't changed since the last meeting. We are looking at cost shifting. We are looking to the system to support folks in the community in crisis situations. We have $9.8 million budgeted to foul folks into the community to support them in the community and replace the services that will be transitioned as a result of the closure of Tinley.
But you've always talked about, and at one time there was an $11 million figure, but whatever it is, that this would be saved. And so folks have an expectation. I mean, we know how we throw, numbers around. But folks in the community would say, we don't want this facility to close, although they're saying that they're going to save whatever the number is. Are you really going to save it or not? Or are you just basically taking this money and just transferring it somewhere else? In which case, I think that the community would be very disappointed with your plan.
Representative, we really expect that money to stay within the mental health system in one form or another. The act of closing Tinley Park will produce about $8.1 million in cost reductions. That allows for money, $9.8 million, to be spent directly in the community now and some operations money to keep Tinley open just long enough to get it shut down the way it needs to be, phased down. But we expect the $8.1 million that will be a result of in cost reductions to stay in the system one way or another.
So net, you're just closing the facility. I mean, let's be real simple about it. Then net, you're closing the facility. No monies are really being saved. Monies are being maybe redistributed or going to other providers.
Well, it's money that would not be spent in the community. I guess one way to look at it is the money right now is being spent in Tinley Park. The money will likely continue to be spent in one form or another, but it will be spent differently than it was at Tinley Park. So to that extent, there is a complete change in the way the money is being spent.
That's right, but again, we do budgets with billions of dollars. And so I'm asking these questions, not for me who sits on appropriations committees and you who have large budgets, but really for the people. I mean, net, you're closing Tinley Park and there's not really going to be any cost savings. Now, is that, that's either correct or incorrect?
Well, it depends on Well, it depends on how you look at it. There will be a cost reduction from the act of closing Tinley Park. That doesn't mean that you can necessarily take the $8.1 million and reallocate it to Department of Corrections or to Department, some other department. Our plan right now is that the money will stay within the mental health system and it will be spent in a constructive manner to support the system either in Region 1 South or some other way, but it will stay within the system.
Let me just say this and I'll go on to the rest of my colleagues.
Right.
when we met in our little meeting, maybe this was just was with me, and I don't know whoever else that you might have met with individually, one of the things that I said was that I disagree with what you're doing on a lot of different points, on very technical points and very simple points. But I think we're both of the same mind that we want to take care of this very vulnerable population. And I said that I wanted to help you. Because when people in general, you know, they look at all of it. We're Springfield. You know, they don't make a distinction between the three branches of government. We're Springfield. We do something wrong, they're going to blame us for it. We do something right, they're going to tell us that we're, you know, that they're happy. And pronouncements have been made where folks that don't understand budgets and cost shifting, maybe like you and I do, they're thinking, hey, you know, I don't want this to close at all. Some people say, well, I might want it to close because we're going to save some money. And so that's why my basic question was, and I think the answer is, it's really not going to save any money at all. That those monies have basically been shifted somewhere else, and I'm not making a judgment whether that's bad or good. You know, but to, you know, the man and woman on the street, a facility is closing that to them has benefit, and no money is being saved. That's what they think, and that's what they've been telling me. And I think that, again, it's not so much us, but you have some explaining to do. And, you know, you're going to have to deal with the folks in these communities and sell them on it. So thank you so much for coming, and this struggle continues. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
As is our protocol, we normally let members ask questions first, so if you would mind deferring, Representative Kosel. Representative Nekritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just have a few questions on the sort of the larger picture, more generally. What was proposed, if you can give me some concept in the governor's budget, what was proposed for cuts to the mental health system?
In the governor's introduced, we have a $59.1 million reduction to our community grants line. That primarily impacts our non-Medicaid services, psychiatric services, some crisis residential services, services to a juvenile justice population, those sorts of non-Medicaid covered services.
And then goodness knows when we cut $2.7 billion out of Medicaid what we're going to be cutting when we do that. So there will be some significant impacts. I understand that there are, and we just got the RFI, so I'm going off of some other information I've received, but there are, you're asking providers in the RFI whether they can, their level of solvency and whether they can continue to operate. Is that because of these issues, that these budget issues that we're facing?
Yes, and we're always very, very careful to monitor how our community providers are doing with respect to their financial stability and trying to find ways that we can best support them and work with them through difficult times. So, yes.
Okay, so you're... So there's new money going into some other programs to move people into supportive housing under the budget, the governor's proposed budget. And how would that, will any of the money from the closure of Tinley be moved into that area? Any of the money saved in the closure of Tinley?
Representative, are you talking about Williams?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what I said. That's kind of what I meant when I said that money would stay within the system one way or another.
Okay. So I understand that the substantial percentage, you know, well in excess of 95% of the clients served at Tinley are uninsured. So when we're cutting to the 59 million, those are cuts to the uninsured.
That's correct. But
so how do we balance all that?
By ensuring that we continue to have a non-Medicaid service package in Region 1 South for those individuals that were previously served by Tinley Park. I'd also add that we are in discussions with the governor's office, DHS, trades, advocates, our partners, and the General Assembly, looking for ways to mitigate that $59 million reduction to our community grants line. As I'm sure you can all appreciate, it's particularly challenging. It's a particularly challenging reduction given what we're doing, not only in terms of our institutional rebalancing, but our long-term care rebalancing. Yeah. So we're very interested in working with the General Assembly and with our system partners to find ways to mitigate that cut.
And I think I've heard you reference maybe an $8 million number, but there's a combined number for the transition from the closure of Tinley and Sanger. What is that number?
14.1.
Okay, and how much of that was for Tinley?
9.8.
Okay, I'm sorry, I misheard that then. Okay, and how did you derive that number?
The number is based on the mental health plan for reinvestment. It includes buying bed days. It includes some assumptions about admissions, some assumptions about where the money will be needed, like in crisis residential, crisis mental health services, acute inpatient hospital. All of those are assumptions, and that's what we use to get to the $9.8 million in reinvestment coming out of Tinley Park in Region 1 South.
And are those allocations between Sanger and Tinley based on the need, or how was that?
Well, there's an additional 4.8 that's going to be result from Sanger, and that, you know, that's, I mean, if Deborah could describe the overall plan for the area, that would, I mean, it'll go to finance that plan.
Okay. So let me understand. The $14 million then is not just a, that's a number that you think is a realistic goal, not a budget, a number driven by the budget.
Yes.
Okay. All right. How confident are you that the proposal submitted under the RFI will come within those numbers?
Well, we're fairly confident. We did a considerable amount of data analysis and trying to project based on hypothetical service packages, what made the most sense for the region, and used that to cast a fairly broad net in terms of potential services in the RFI. It's a flexible plan so that we'll know more as we get proposals in. We may get more of one thing and less of another, and the plan is dynamic enough to account for that. We're fairly confident that we will get a comprehensive array of services to offer people in the region to support the services that were previously provided by Tinley Park.
And if that comes in excess of the $9.8 million, sir, how would you anticipate meeting that need?
We're really trying to meet that $9.8 million mark.
Okay.
And so we'll be looking for proposals and a combination of service offerings that will allow us to live within that $9.8 million budget.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Representative Kosel.
Is this on? Yes. This isn't the first time that we have proposed closing Tinley. Do you know when the first time was and how many attempts there have been to close Tinley?
a little before my time, but I think it was 2005. I could be wrong about that.
Yes, that's correct.
I think this is the third attempt to close it, and it seems like you have a very, very ambitious timeline for these proposals. When do you expect to be finished reviewing the proposals?
We plan to start reviewing the proposals on April 23rd, and we'll probably take about a week to do that.
So you'll start on the 23rd, and then you figure you'll be through by the end of the month to do that?
Ideally.
And then from there, you need to negotiate with these providers?
From there, we will issue contracts and move forward with the contracting process.
Now, I'm absolutely amazed that anyone would propose to sell services to the state of Illinois right now. Exactly how long do you think these providers will have to wait to be paid once a contract is issued and they have provided services?
Unfortunately, Representative, there is a delay in payments from the Comptroller's office. I think they are right now issuing payments from November.
So we're looking at what you're saying is approximately 6-7 month delay after the paperwork has been approved, after it has been submitted correctly from the time it gets to the Comptroller's office. Sometimes, what is the usual length of time within your department from the time a bill is submitted till it gets to the Comptroller's office?
Well, we don't have a payment cycle, so we submit bills as they come in, and we are equally burdened by the delays from the Comptroller's office. Yes. So it's about 6 months.
Yeah, the Comptroller's office is 6 months, but it takes you 6 months to get... No,
no,
that's what I'm trying... So in your front end, before it goes to the Comptroller, how long does it take for you to provide... provide the Comptroller with the paperwork to put it in line?
We send our bills in fairly quickly. We don't have a payment cycle, so they go in right away.
So right away is 2 days, a day, 24 hours, 10 minutes? I have no idea.
I don't know the exact amount of time, but I could find out for you.
Okay, just a guesstimate. I mean, I don't need to know the exact amount. I just need an idea whether it's 2 weeks or two minutes. I have no idea. And you don't either?
I don't off the top of my head. I can probably find out for you before we leave here.
Maybe.
Well, one of the things that's happened is there's been a delay in processing an FY12 because of the switch to HFS. They're doing the processing, and there's taken some time to get that up and running. But if you discount that, and I mean, as we go through the year, the times get shorter, the processing gets better. There were just a lot of things, a lot of pieces to be put in place that weren't in place when we started. So it's Dr. Ferguson can find out, but I do know that right now it's a lot better than it was when we started the fiscal year, and as we move through it, the times do get reduced.
Yeah, because I've gotten calls from providers that say that, you know, and it's only a time once we get a invoice number and we know what that is, but it's the time to get there, and we can't discount anything. If you're going to ask for proposals from these folks, we have to figure out a way that they can get paid and get paid in a timely manner if they're going to be able to provide services. I mean, these people can't be expected to provide services and not get paid for that. So that concerns me. That concerns me that we don't have a plan in place to figure out how to do this, and that we will ask them to extend credit. And what happens when they don't get the money and then the services aren't there? Where do we go with these folks? So our track record is not very good, and so this does concern me. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Cunningham.
Thank you. I just sort of want to pivot off of the questions that Representative Kosol was asking. I noticed in the RFI you've identified hospitals in the region that have psychiatric care facilities or wards. Have you spoken with them beyond alerting them to the existence of an RFI? And the reason I ask that is I'm wondering what sort of response have you received? Are they anxious to go into business with the state in this regard? Number one, do they have the facilities available to do it? Number two, do they want to do that given the state's inability to pay its bills on time? And so I'll just leave it at that if you can answer those questions.
First, to go back to Representative Kosel's question, I was just told that we can adjudicate a claim in 2 to 3 days.
Thank you.
Yes, the hospitals that we've listed have expressed some interest in contracting with us to provide these services. They have, before we went into the procurement process, which we're in right now, but before that, they obviously wanted to see the contract language and the specifics before they made a commitment. Now we're in the procurement phase, and we really can't, we're limited in the kinds of discussions we can have for people who potentially may be submitting proposals. We'll know more, obviously, after the 20th, but we're very optimistic that there are hospitals in the region, in Region 1 South, and also hospitals in Region 1 Central, who are willing and have capacity to provide acute inpatient bed days.
So is there a goal in place, and maybe that comes in, that becomes clear after the 20th, that you'll be able to say at any given time we have access to 100 beds, 75 beds, 200 beds at area hospitals. Will you be able to get to that point sometime this spring?
Yes.
And what if you can't? What if some of these hospitals look at the request, determine that it's not financially feasible for them, that they do not have the facilities available, or that they don't want to be, they don't want to fight the state for payment, and you have fewer than 100 beds, fewer than 50 beds, what happens to the displaced patients who are currently in inpatient care at Tinley Park if those beds aren't available?
Well, let me first say that I sincerely hope that doesn't happen, because the real philosophy behind this is to allow people to get care closest to their communities and best integrated with other primary care, health care, and human services supports. So I'm really hoping for and working for a plan that allows people to get the care in their communities. If that's not possible, we will purchase bed days where we can, and the state hospital system in Region 1, that is Madden and Chicago Reed, will have to continue to be provide a safety net for those individuals. It's not an ideal situation because it would involve people from Region 1 South traveling what I consider to be a tremendous distance to get care. It doesn't allow for them to have the kind of contact with their family and community, and it would really be, I think, very unfortunate. So we're really hoping that providers in Region 1 South are willing and able to do this business, and we're very, very confident that they can and will.
Okay. And do you anticipate there'll be some point this spring where you can report to us how many beds, and I don't know if this is the proper terminology, that you have under contract, so to speak? Will we be at that point sometime in the next couple of weeks?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Another point on that. How about security? I think that there's a general notion that Tinley Park provides a pretty secure setting for individuals who could be dangerous and are dangerous to the general public. How about at these different hospitals? What sort of provisions, what sort of safeguards will the state have in place to make sure these are secured facilities? These are hospitals in neighborhoods, some of them in very densely populated areas. How can we be sure that when the state sends a patient to these facilities that that patient will be secure?
Well, first, Representative, I would say that Tinley Park is a minimum security facility. It's a locked facility. Most psychiatric facilities, even community-based psychiatric facilities, are locked. The population of patients served at Tinley Park, therefore, are not our most dangerous patients. As you may know, Chester is our maximum security hospital, and the patients with the greatest propensity for violence or aggression are transferred to Chester. The patients that are hospitalized at Tinley Park are diagnostically and behaviorally no different from individuals admitted to any other psychiatric hospital. There are safety and security concerns, but they, in my opinion, don't exceed those that one would have in a community hospital. If it turns out that there are some considerations that we haven't factored in, we do continue, like I said, to plan to continue to meet with our subcommittee, and that's something that we can address. But I think it's important to emphasize that the patients served at Tinley Park really are no different and are not our most violent patient population.
Okay. One other point. I know one of the plans or some of the materials I've read, there's been talk about a mobile crisis response team of some sort. Can you describe exactly what that entails and how they'll go into action, what kind of scenarios they would be called into action for?
We had actually initially thought about that and modeled it after a very successful mobile crisis response team that I believe is in place in Milwaukee. As we began meeting with our providers and talking with advocates and stakeholders, that didn't seem like something that would actually work for Region 1 South. We decided to go with crisis outreach that didn't necessarily have the mobile component, and that is maybe, for example, either co-located in a community mental health center or ideally co-located in an emergency room to provide on-the-spot emergency assessment, stabilization, and linkage. So we initially thought we were going to go with a mobile model, but as we thought about it and as we got input from others, we really decided to go with an outreach model.
Okay. My concern is someone who, from the criminal justice background, worked in the Cook County Sheriff's Office for years, is we've seen this state and other states around the country sort of recede from institutionalized mental health care. We've seen an added burden placed on the criminal justice system. We see it every day. I saw it when I worked for the Sheriff's Office at Cook County Jail, which is, you know, commonly referred to as the largest mental health facility in North America, because anywhere from 1,000 to 2,000 individuals in the daily inmate count there are receiving some sort of mental health treatment, whether it's actual counseling or medication. That's my biggest concern in this proposal, is that we're going to continue to see a shift to the criminal justice system, whether it's county jails or the state correctional system down the road. What can you say to assure individuals in the law enforcement community, police officers on the front lines, and to people in the institutions as you go up the chain in the criminal justice system, that this is not going to, Tinley Park closing is not going to add to their burden?
Well, the first thing I would say is that I share your concern, and that it's equally unacceptable for us in the Division of Mental Health that persons with mental illness are incarcerated and don't have access to care. What I can tell you is that our focus of trying to enhance the crisis system and the crisis system in EDs in particular is in fact due to our sensitivity to the issue of not having people with mental illness go into the criminal justice system. by enhancing the psychiatric emergency response in EDs. We want to make sure that if law enforcement brings somebody into an emergency room, they have somebody to assess them, to stabilize, a place to stabilize them, and a place to link them, and that the default would not be Cook County Jail. That was the thinking behind the enhanced and expanded crisis system and focusing it primarily on the emergency department.
Right, and that's why I asked about the mobile crisis response team, which seemed to be somewhat promising to me, because I think the scenario you just outlined happens all the time. A police agency brings someone with a mental health issue into the emergency room. That person is often stabilized and put back out in the community, maybe with a packet of medication, only to reoffend, and either reoffend because of their mental illness or because that's the only way to get any sort of services. They have nowhere else to go. I'm not sure I see in this plan a fix to that problem. And that problem exists, actually, whether or not Tinley Park stays open or not. That's a problem. But what is the department going to do if there is going to be added monies available now that the institution is no longer going to be there? How can some of those dollars be reinvested to act as a stop right there on the front lines, which really is the emergency room, where you could say to the police officer, okay, we'll handle this. We don't want this handled in the criminal justice system. We want it handled in the mental health treatment system. So, and I'm not sure that I see in this proposal anything that's really terribly different from what's going on right now.
Well, what I think it is different in that once the person comes into the emergency room and they're identified as somebody who potentially could have gone to Tinley Park, they won't just get medication and be turned back out on the streets. That they'll have linkage and monitoring and follow-up and all that goes with that. So we really are trying to focus on those 1,900 people who would have gone to Tinley Park and ensuring that we have services, supports, linkage, follow-up, all the entire array of services in place to ensure that people don't end up in the criminal justice system.
Okay. Thank you.
Let me just add, if I can, Representative, and I really applaud you for your question and your focus on that, because we have to approach this from a variety of perspectives. And another one in the human service area is the Medicaid program. And Director Hamis at the Department of Health Care Family Services is simultaneously working with another group of General Assembly members on what would be cuts to Medicaid. But we're looking at where that waste occurs. And there's a tremendous amount of waste in the inpatient admission of people with often substance abuse problems, for which we pay, you know, $5,000 to $10,000, and they leave a few days later no better than they were, maybe soberer, but not having had their condition addressed. And so we want to link that Medicaid effort to the focus of the department, to the Division of Mental Health and the Division of Alcohol and Substance Abuse, so we can really look at this comprehensively and not from the perspective of which payment fund payment is coming from. But it's a big problem. It exists today with Tinley Park, but we think that we're motivated to solve that problem, and we think that these components of the plan will help us get there.
Thank you.
Senate, Representative Jones.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chairman. I have a... Well, my questions are going to focus on two areas. The first is the timeline for this RFI. So this is the complete RFI that you submitted to hospitals and providers?
That's correct.
So when was this submitted to them?
April. It was posted April 4th.
April 4th of this year?
Yes.
And according to your timeline, when a couple of my colleagues ask you, though, so April 23rd is when you guys will review the RFIs, correct?
They're due on the 20th, and then we will begin our review on the 23rd.
So you'll do your review on the 23rd, and when will you make your, when is the plan to make the decision?
I think we have a timeline for within a week.
So you're going to make your you're going to review. You receive 100 or 1,000. You're going to review all those in a week.
We're going to review as many as we can in that time. We'll take as much time as we need to review all of them.
Okay. Well, in just to focus on what you submitted to us, because one of the some of the language in here states that you're going to quickly, this RFI seeks to quickly implement phase one services by July 1st. And through some of the testimony, I think you guys have identified some holes within this RFI. So are you satisfied that this is a complete package that you guys can review and make a informed decision in a week?
We are very confident that we have developed an RFI that includes a comprehensive array of services that providers will offer to provide in Region 1 South and Region 1 Central. We also understand that the plan for Region 1 South is a dynamic one, and that's why we've asked our subcommittee partners and stakeholders to continue to work with us after Tinley Park closes to continue to refine and improve the plan. We've talked about enhancements that we would like to see occur in Phase 2, and we expect that there will continue to be modifications and improvements in the plan. But if you're asking me, is this an aggressive plan, I would answer, sir, yes it is. Is it one that we can accomplish? I'd also answer in the affirmative.
So it's an impressive plan to you because you guys submitted. I mean, I'm just going by the quickly and the timely and wondering why language says quickly and you guys are not willing to phase it in. And have you do you think you engaged all the stakeholders in this process?
Yes, sir, I do. And I think it's an impressive plan not because of what we've done, but because of the manner in which we've engaged and reached out to our stakeholders and advocates and community providers, listened to their input, and had that inform what we're doing going forward. It's an impressive plan because I think it offers the people of Region 1 South a really good alternative, community-based care that's better integrated and more recovery-focused. That's what makes the plan impressive.
Okay, so going with your statement about the stakeholders, looking on page 45 that you directed us to earlier, you listed, you said almost 85 or 100 stakeholders, but going through the list, probably 52 of these individuals have government email addresses, which leads me to the assumption that if you have 85 and 52 work for the state of Illinois or somewhere else, have you really engaged all the stakeholders in Region 1?
Yes, sir. I can provide you with the entire list of people. That's not everybody listed in the RFI, but there's a much broader list that does include 133 participants, and they're not all government employees.
So when we asked you earlier, was this the complete list? You said it was a complete list.
I think that's a complete list in terms of two subcommittees represented. I think it's the hospital engagement and the service models and innovations. There are other subgroups that also involve additional members from the community.
Okay. Is there a nursing home component that goes with this as well? If in the perfect world, if the closure is granted, how many of the 1,900 people that you've identified will transition or end up at a nursing home or a facility?
In a perfect world? None.
Okay. And you guys have planned for that as well?
Yes, sir.
I notice on here that in implementing this plan, who at DHS will be responsible for the many components in implementation? As Representative Cunningham mentioned, if there's a component with Cook County, for example, who in DHS will be responsible for making sure that each component in this RFI is followed to a T?
The Division of Mental Health is responsible, and we have our senior executive and hospital leadership team will be actively monitoring the implementation and functioning of the plan.
Okay. And lastly, you mentioned that you made a statement that some of these individuals are not dangerous or a threat. What assurances can you provide that the hospitals that you would have the 1,900 people that will transition to, what assurances are that you saying that these people are not dangerous or a threat? You just make.
Well, what I would say, Representative, is that the primary thing that differentiates people who are hospitalized at Tinley Park versus people who are hospitalized at a community psychiatric ward is that the people at Tinley Park are uninsured. They're no more dangerous or behaviorally out of control than anybody else that's treated routinely in the community. They just don't have access to insurance. And so the reassurance I would give to providers is simply that, and that we do not believe that the population of people served at Tinley Park is dangerous, and those that are transferred within our system to more secure hospitals.
Okay. And lastly, you were asked about the payment. If you talk to the hospitals and they agree to work with the state of Illinois, assuming that they won't get paid for a year, and part of the, on page 66 of this RFI, it states the compensation, but it doesn't list, you said it'd take 2 or 3 days. I think you confirmed it'll take 2 or 3 days for you, the audit process, right? Or
to adjudicate a claim, yes.
So after you adjudicate the claim, how long do you put in the RFI? How long will it take them to get paid? And the hospitals have agreed to this?
As I said earlier, I think the comptroller is paying bills that were submitted in November now, and I'm sorry, Representative, but that's not something I'm in a position to impact. That's just the reality of the situation.
Well, I'm not asking if you guys can impact it. I'm asking about the RFI that you've submitted, which states about the payment, and just pointing to page 66 of the RFI that you have here today.
I'm not sure what you're asking me.
Well, I'm asking, have the hospitals that you've identified, when they resubmit or apply on April 20th to the RFI, does it state in there that, number one, takes 2 or 3 days to adjudicate the claim, number two, that it's going to take probably a year for you to get paid, and what happens in between that year if they don't get paid? Do they drop us from providing these services?
What you see before you is what's in the RFI. The providers that have expressed interest in providing elements of the plan are aware of the delays in the state payments, and it's taking approximately 6 months from the time they submit the claim for them to get reimbursed.
And lastly, can I ask you, what is the rush? Do you feel that it's adequate time, seeing April 1st, RFIs went out, or April 4th, April 20th, they come back? Do you feel there's adequate timetable? And I guess you got a July 1st implementation phase one date. What's the rush?
Well, what I would say, Representative, is, and I think I've already said that, I concede that it is an aggressive timetable. I think we've been as candid and as conservative as we could be in terms of what we think we can reasonably accomplish by July 1. And I think that we can have in place a comprehensive, flexible, and responsive plan that can provide care that was previously provided by Tinley Park.
And is there a report date after, say, it's implemented? You guys come back before this committee or General Assembly and say that we made great progress or we erred? Will you guys come back before us and say that?
I'd be delighted to come back and talk about what a success it has been.
What about failures?
That as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's all the questions.
Thank you, Representative. I have just a few concerns myself. It's laudable that we are looking at delivering health care differently in 2012. We know that best practices, there is a home model. But I share with the other members how aggressive this is moving forward. Also, as Representative Jones said, are these in this RFI, and I haven't read it, is it a multi-year grant? Because what if they, again, as you pointed out, next year, what sounded good today, this week, is not going to look that good 6 months down the line, especially when, as pointed out by Mr. Gelder, then the fact that this is a multifaceted thing that we're doing as far as trying to save dollars. And we're going to be looking at hospitals and cutting their rates. So what they're looking at now and what they'll be being paid going forward, and other providers as well, is not going to look that attractive maybe 6 months from now. So what is the plan that is there? I mean, is it a multifaceted grant that we're offering?
Multifaceted or
multi-year? I'm sorry.
No, we're basically looking at contracting for FY13, but also, Senator, working very, very hard in the first few months of FY13 with our subcommittee partners to try and figure out how well we're doing, what we need to improve, what needs to be tweaked, so that we maintain those relationships and hopefully maintain those partnerships going into FY14. But it is just a single year contracting.
And I can see why these facilities or these partners would like to buy into it. But it's going to be a spike in their capacity. And they don't really realize how it's going to impact on them going forward. So what I haven't heard, at least you explain, what is Plan B?
Plan B would be to provide the capacity that was previously provided by Tinley Park in our Region 1 hospitals.
Okay. You said there may not be savings. Are we saving dollars? I'm assuming now, this might be a question for you, in capital costs, are there any capital expenditures that we are putting out there? Because I'm taking you're talking basically about general revenue funds.
I don't know that we can say that we would save money on capital costs. We would save future expenditures by not having the need to make the capital investment. So there would be, I mean, to the extent that we need to do something at Tinley Park to keep the facilities structurally sound and safe, then we would not be having to make those expenditures. We don't really have a number for that.
You don't have a number, Ken. Going forward and talking about cost again, you said we're shifting the dollars to the community. Now, there is a human cost that's there to the employees. Are we shifting their salaries to the community as well? So what happens to that 147 or whatever number that you gave us about employees that you have at the site?
The 165 employees?
Okay.
Well, as I said, the layoff packages have gone out. They went out last week, and negotiations are ongoing. We're trying to provide resources to assist them in transitioning to other jobs. And I believe earlier this year, Mr. Doyle did a computer run with IDES and the job classifications at Tinley Park, and perhaps he can talk more about that. But we are very concerned about the employees at Tinley Park. We recognize that the closure does impact them very, very directly, and we'll do as much as we can to assist in this transition.
I'm not going to belabor the point. We've been doing this for an hour and a half now. So if we could, thank you very much. Any other questions from members? Sure. Representative Cunningham.
Just one quick question. Obviously, Tinley Park sits on, I think, at least what used to be a very valuable piece of land. Has the state, to the best of any of your knowledge, done any study as to how much, and maybe this is a question for CMS, I don't know, how much money the state could make by selling the property?
That is a question for CMS. To my knowledge, they have not, and as was noted before, this is our third route going through this, and in the first two, we did not do an assessment of the property. So, to my knowledge, there hasn't been one done. If CMS has done it, then
well,
they can say.
Well, you're throwing CMS under the bus, so let them come on up and tell us what's happening.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. My name is Nick Cantalopoulos. I'm the Deputy Director for Property Management at CMS. No studies have been done to this point on Tinley Park. The procedure we follow with properties that the state seeks to dispose of are outlined in the State Property Control Act. We don't begin to act until those properties are closed and then surplus to CMS. And then the process is fairly straightforward. If it can't be utilized by the state, we obtain three appraisals to determine the fair market value of the property. And then the property is offered to municipalities first at the average of those three appraisals. If no municipalities located in the county where the property is located are interested in purchasing the property at fair market value, then it goes to a public sale.
So you're saying that at no point, because of state law, you have made no... You haven't looked at this at all. You haven't preliminarily looked for ballpark figures on how much it would cost. And it sounds like you're saying that applies to all state properties. And I think you said it's by state law. I mean, maybe that's something that needs to be looked at. I think that that's something that should be in the equation when we're talking about closing any state-owned facilities.
Sure. And the reason we don't act is, for example, earlier it was mentioned that the first time this property came up for discussion to close was 2005. If we had acted then preliminarily, we would have spent thousands of dollars to appraise. Potentially, we would have needed surveys. Potentially, we needed other things just to simply get an appraisal. Well, that money would have been thrown away because no appraisal in 2005 would be good even a year later. And with the way this real estate market is been, even 6 months is a stretch to consider a appraisal to be accurate. So if we would have acted every time the state sought to close Tinley, we would have thrown away thousands upon thousands of dollars and had documents which, sure, would today we'd be able to give you some sort of inaccurate guess, but we feel that it's not fiscally prudent to do it until the property is surplus to CMS. It's under our control, and then we would move forward.
Okay. Thank you.
And I have one more question for process. Do these bids have to be vetted further after you take your week or two to do it by the Executive Ethics Committee?
Not that I'm aware of, Senator. Because they're purchase of care, we believe we can move right from, and we already contract with the providers who are bidding, we believe we can go right from proposals to issuing contracts.
Okay. If this is what you believe, and I don't know any difference when I ask the question, but if you do have to go through that process, what is the time? How does that impact on your timetable?
If we did have to go through the Executive Ethics Commission?
Correct.
I'm sorry, I can't answer that. I'm not sure how it would.
Mr. Gowden, no?
I don't have an estimate either, Senator. It would that's not, you're either on one track or another, and we're on the track of this being a purchase of service agreement, which is not considered under the procurement code in the same way.
Okay, thank you. Representative Creswick.
Yeah, just following along with what Representative Cunningham was talking about. Now, I understand what you said, why we don't have a figure, but does anyone have any guesstimate at all, unofficially? I don't want to hold you to this, but just any general idea what that property might be worth if it was on the market, if anyone wants to answer that. Okay.
Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Please stick around. Next, we have a list of 10 under elected officials. I don't see a couple of them. Is there someone here from the Will County Executive Walsh, Larry Walsh's office? Larry Walsh, I go down the list. Jim Glasgow from Will County State's Attorney, Paul Culpus from the Will County Sheriff's, Mayor Vivian Covington from the Village of University Park, Dr. Donald A. McKinley, Superintendent of Schools, West Harvey, Dixmoor School District Number 147, Tony DuBois, Inspector General representing the Mayor of the City of Markham, Kevin Brimmett, Mayor, Village of Dixmoor. I just gave you seven names. There are five of those here, so we have six chairs up front. Any of you six gentlemen here? We also have, if they do not showing up, Stephen Douglas from the Illinois Republican State Central Committeeman, 1st Congressional District, Patricia Holm, Cook County Sheriff's Department, Sandy Stavropoulos, please excuse me if I butchered your name, from the Assistant State's Attorney, Cook County State's Attorney's Office. No one else is here. Wherever you want to begin, ladies first, please identify yourself and... No? Michael, start from the end.
Oh, I'm sorry. My name is Patricia Horn. I'm with the Cook County Department of Corrections. I'm here on behalf of Sheriff Dart.
Okay, no, just...
Should I be
questions?
Go ahead?
Yes, so tell us what's on your mind.
First of all, let me, on behalf of the sheriff, wish you good wishes, both as the chief law enforcement officer in Cook County, but also as a former member of the General Assembly, where he served for 10 years and sat on panels very much like the one you're sitting on today. At the time that he was in the General Assembly, we were faced with state closure of correctional facilities and other important issues of the day, so certainly he understands the gravity of the situation that you're facing at this time. When he learned of the possible closing of Tinley Park, the concern was that this would be a problem at the Cook County Jail. It isn't a matter of individuals at Tinley Park who are in the criminal justice system as such, but because when they don't receive continuing and adequate health care services, mental health care services, they may then commit crimes, whether they be property crimes or crimes that are violent in nature, that result in their placement in the Cook County Jail as a result of that behavior. Right now, the Cook County Jail sees approximately 20% of its population as having some form of mental illness. In gross terms, that would be about 1,800 offenders that we have at the jail. The jail has inadequate resources to provide 1,800 persons with the kind of mental health care services in the form of treatment and therapy to care for their needs. We provide them through CIRMAC Health Services with what we would call maintenance care in the form of medication and limited group therapy and involvement from our psychologists and psychiatrists. To give you an example of how things can go awry, contrary to the best plans that can be made, we have inmates who come into the jail on simple property crimes and can result in, I'll end with this, can result in because of failure to have good psychotropic medication administration, become disoriented, become combative. They're then injuring our staff. They're injuring CIRMAC employees. And then, believe it or not, they can wind up with additional criminal charges because of their behavior. And so somebody comes in on a simple property crime, possibly a 3-year sentence, it can escalate to a 9-year sentence when these other kinds of misconduct occurs while in the jail. So all we're trying to say to you is please think through the full impact of these decisions in closing a facility like Tinley Park, which on its surface may not seem as though it has a connection to the jail, but in fact may have some very real consequences for the jail.
Thank you.
I need to apologize up front. I'm pretty angry as I sit here after listening to that non-specific information you were just handed. If you were the board of directors for a corporation and you accepted anything that was said here today to make a decision on the profits of your stockholders, they'd run you out of town. You didn't hear anything specific
but,
today.
But we're not that so, board. So, but if you would
identify
but you, yourself.
This is government.
Are these your remarks, sir?
Yes.
You're on the timer.
Well, I'm going to exceed 3 minutes.
No, you're not. No. You will not run this committee.
No.
We'll start you at 2 minutes, but don't come to the table. I don't care how angry you are. There is a protocol that will be adhered to.
This is a moral outrage, what's happening here.
Then you can be outraged all you want within your 2 minutes. Identify yourself, sir.
My name is Jim Glasgow. I'm the state's attorney of Will County, and a quarter of the people that come to Tinley Park come from my county. Okay. And the things that this lady just mentioned about the spinoff and ripple costs are real, and you didn't hear a word about those. Those dwarf the operational costs of the Tinley Park Mental Health Center. I've got a saying on the wall of my office, a quote by John F. Kennedy, that the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who in the time of moral crisis choose to steer the neutral course. We are in a moral crisis of the highest order with the attempted closing of this facility of last resort. It is absolutely essential to the safety of every man, woman, and child in Will County and southern Cook County. You cannot close it based on what I just heard today. There's no plan. This RFI, it's ridiculous, farcical, and ill-conceived. You haven't heard anything. The 207 employees or 158 or whatever it is, these people behind me know how many there are. These are human beings that are going to be thrown on the unemployment line. There are unemployment costs. There are potential foreclosures, divorces. There are dependents of these people. These are remedial costs that are going to come into the system. I apologize. I heard a figure of 690 admissions at Tinley Park for the first quarter of this year. If that's the case, we're going to go to about 2,800 for the year. That's up from 1,500 just 4 years ago. That's almost a doubling of the population. These projections, when Representative Kozel asked about the payment track, were you talking about dealing with private entities that are going to accept payment 6 months down the line? There's nothing in concrete. I can't imagine that these so-called stakeholders are going to be run in the red for 6 months. It's not going to happen. There are tremendous remedial costs. One of the things I heard was that these people aren't dangerous. That's not the case. These people have to be found to be either dangerous to themselves or dangerous to others or unable to care for themselves. The people who have mental illnesses depend upon us who have been blessed by God to have our faculties. To do anything less, again, is an outrage. And I'm begging you, please, this commission has already decided that we can't close Tinley Park until you have a viable alternative. What you heard here today is the most unviable alternative. If I ran my office based on that kind of information, it would collapse. So please, at the very least, I understand an alternative, but when you are asking what is the land worth, and they 5 years, 7 years after trying to close it, they can't tell you what the land's worth? That's a joke. Please, reconsider, keep the facility open until sane minds can decide what the alternative is. You've previously found that. Get another facility in place that'll save a lot of the jobs of these individuals and limit the human suffering, both for the patients and for the employees. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Assistant State's Attorney Sandy Stavropoulos from the Cook County State's Attorney's Office
representing State's Attorney Anita Alvarez. I supervise a unit entitled the Seniors and Persons with Disabilities Unit. My people handle close to 4,000 mental health treatment and commitment cases each year. These are the seriously mentally ill, homicidal, suicidal, catatonic, totally unable to care for themselves, eating disorders, close to death. Bottom line, these are people that need to be stabilized in an inpatient setting before you can even think about outpatient community services. As you heard earlier and as stated in the RFI, 98% of those that go into Tinley start out in EDs, emergency room admissions. This RFI puts the responsibility solidly back on the shoulders of these EDs, these private hospitals. You know, I want to point out again, and Representative Riley talked about it as well, this RFI was published on 4-4, a deadline of 4-20. Number one, this is ridiculous. But let's look at the goals they've set out. Noble though they might be, it presumes a widespread support from private hospitals. Is this realistic? Has anyone signed on yet? Will anyone sign on, given the fiscal problems within the state of Illinois? These are for-profit hospitals. You'll see in the RFI, they talk about all these requirements of augmenting their staff. This is money out of the pockets of these private hospitals. Payments have to come from Illinois. Come on, let's think about this realistically. And as pointed out also by one of the representatives, this is cost shifting, not cost saving. Bottom line, these people are hurting. These families are hurting. They need help. They need real help. They don't need cost shifting. They don't need passing the buck. They need a place to go, a place close to their homes, a place that doesn't have the hospital's bottom line as their first priority. At this moment, if Tinley closes, there is no such place. They talk about a plan B. What is plan B? Madden and Reed. Those hospitals are already overcrowded. And one last point, in the plan from DHS, it talks about converting Reed to a long-term care facility only, which means these patients will be left with only one alternative, Madden, which will have no room for them, which means they'll be out on the streets, which means they'll be in the courtrooms all over this county with criminal cases or out on the streets with no place to go. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. My name is Donald McKinney, and I'm superintendent in School District 147. It is my pleasure and honor to have this opportunity to speak with you today in support of the Tinley Park Mental Health Center. As the superintendent of schools for West Harvey Dixmoor School District 147, I speak to you as a representative of our school board and our entire community. Months ago, I was provided the opportunity to speak with you in support of maintaining this facility, and much of what you will hear today will include similar themes from that moment. As someone working directly with families and children in the South Suburbs, I see firsthand what unemployment and poverty does to a community and to the spirits of the children living in communities highly impacted by joblessness and poverty. I am here to say that the South Suburbs are fed up. We are speaking with one voice today, telling you that we are mobilizing, we are organizing, and we are not going to stand for one more instance of the state of Illinois balancing its budget on the backs of those hardest hit by the economic downturn of the last many years. On top of that, this facility provides a service to many in the South Suburbs who may otherwise suffer in silence or, worse yet, lash out in ways that could further decrease the quality of life for those living in the southern suburbs. I implore you to consider the option of making the Tinley Park Mental Health Center a permanent fixture and support the South Suburbs by not only keeping the facility open, but by expanding its capacity. Any economic boost for the Chicago metropolitan area should start with a boost to the South Suburbs. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Stephen Douglas. Thank you for the privilege of addressing you today. Allow me to begin by stating that I do not believe this is a Republican issue or a Democratic issue. Politics has no role in this. This is a human issue dealing with some of the weakest and most vulnerable among us. Out of respect for your time and our guests, I've prepared some simple fact sheets for you. They deliver bullet points with citations on very fundamental things: community bed capacity, the geographic service imbalance this would create, the fact that Tinley serves 19% of the mental health patients served by DHS, very fundamental things like that. And the reductions in mental health funding Governor Quinn is proposing at the exact same time we're going to be putting forth these closures. In the meantime, I'd like to quickly focus on what I call three C's: cash, contrast, and credibility. Cash. I've taken the time to review every page of Illinois' line item budget. This is similar to my recent efforts, some of you may be familiar with, assisting the state of Arizona in restoring organ transplant funding for Medicaid patients. Governor Quinn estimates the closing Tinley will save $8.1 million in fiscal year 2013. I have found multiple funding solutions that will give the governor his budget savings, restore these facility fundings, and not reduce any other state services or increase taxes. One of the best solutions is using the Illinois Mental Health Fund. This fund exists, and this is the description of the fund, to help finance the advancement of mental health facilities and services in the state of Illinois. The money in this fund comes from payments at facilities like Tinley, Singer, and other mental health centers. It runs a multi-million-dollar surplus every year. According to page 95, line 5 of Governor Quinn's budget proposal, this fund is projected to have a $21.4 million surplus at the end of this coming year. A simple solution would be to take some of that money, keep Tinley and Singer open while we come up with a more thorough plan, and we'll still have a $10 million surplus instead of a $20 million surplus. Other alternatives include selling the land Tinley's on, and finally building the facility that DHS promised when they closed Howe. Included, I have a press release from 2008 where DHS promised when they were closing the Howe Developmental Center that they would build a state-of-the-art facility in the south suburbs. That's relevant because it was supposed to be finished and completed this year. We should be celebrating, according to DHS and their past promises, we should be celebrating the opening of a brand new facility this year, not fretting and worrying about the closure of our last one. I'll move on and wrap up my last 2 points. And those are just two examples of many. I have plenty more if you'd like to discuss or see some of the work I did in Arizona. The money's there, and if we work together, we can do this without taking away from anyone else. I believe that in my heart. Credibility. This involves results from the first FOIA I've ever filed in my entire life, and I have the documents here. On January 19th, Governor Quinn told the public that after great deliberation and effort, he had developed the Active Community Care Transition Plan. This was a very big thing. He stated that, you know, they put a lot of time and effort into this, and we finally had our solution. He said, quote, "The approach we are taking will allow for the safe transition of care for some of our most vulnerable citizens to community care settings." That's January 19th. January 22nd, 3 days later, the administration told two reporters and one editorial board that there was no plan yet. In the words of Phil Kadner, "The state does not have a plan in place to treat those people once Tinley Park is closed." During a telephone conference call with the Southtown Star editorial board last week, state officials basically said, "Trust us." On January 24th, I emailed Director Sadler, Mr. Gelder, and four others a polite three-sentence email asking them to, quote, "kindly provide me a copy of the plan." No one replied, which is fine. I understand they're busy people. The next day, I filed a FOIA request, which was honored by the administration. They said that this was the entire plan. It was 15 pages long, and it comprised of the press release from the 19th, along with 3 pages of the closure ranking system. It was 15 pages total. They told me that's the plan. On January 26th, the next day, the administration emailed service providers a now 26-page plan and announced they had hired Mr. Derek Dufresne and Mr. Michael Meyer. Nearly every page of the plan that they emailed service providers is copied word for word off the website of these two gentlemen, who by all appearances are capable, compassionate, efficient professionals. But again, we've gone from no plan to a 15-page plan to a 26-page plan that's copied from their website, someone else's website, And then on February 6th, if my understanding is correct, the administration dropped a 100-something page plan on your laps shortly before the last hearing. That sequence to me clearly demonstrates there was no plan in place at the time of Governor Quinn's press release on the 19th. It calls into question their credibility. I believe they've been making this up as they go along, and that is absolutely unacceptable when we're dealing with human lives, especially the weakest and most vulnerable among us. I have all those documents there. The last little thing I'll say real quick is I mentioned the two consultants they hired. This is the third C, contrast. You know, we have cash, contrast, and credibility. Oh, sorry. Okay. The last project these consultants worked on in North Carolina took 3 years.
Mr. Daglis.
One closure, and now we're looking at 1 year for foreclosure. So thank you for your time. I hope that info helps you. And if you need any data or anything, there's no spin. I'd be happy to help if I can.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Paul Kalpas. Mayor Vivian Covington. Tony DuBois. Kevin Brimmett. None of them are here. We have next employee organizations and unions and associations. Mr. Henry Bear. Michelle Hatchett Dentman from INA, Mr. Bear from ASCME. Not Mr. Bear.
Mr. Bear. Good evening. My name is Ann Irving. I'm the policy director with ASCME Council 31, and I'm here in place of Henry Bear, who had intended to join you today but was unable to return from Springfield timely. So I'm standing in. And I think it's important to note, it's a large document. I don't know how much time you've had to review it. The request for information provided by the Department of Human Services released last week essentially lays out, you can break it into two parts. One is ideas to prevent the need for hospitalization. And the other part is buying private hospital beds to replace inpatient admissions at Tinley Park. So to take the first part first, as was said earlier, for the department to fund programs to prevent the need for hospitalization is laudable. But there are a number of concerns. One is that this is being launched at a time of $59.1 million in budget cuts for mental health services for the exact same folks that are to be addressed in the prevention plan. So my concern is that the department is taking away with one hand, not because they want to, but because that's the governor's budget proposal, while they give with the other. And in the end, what will be in place to serve individuals who are uninsured with mental illness may be the exact same thing or less. So how effective prevention can be at a time of tremendous budget scarcity is a real question. And that leaves aside what we've heard so far as well about the capacity of mental health agencies to provide these services. So then the other part of the plan, to buy private hospital beds to replace Tinley Park, there are a number of concerns as well. First, it's based upon the idea that a smaller number of beds will be needed because that prevention plan was supposed to work. But it may not, because the funding may well be inadequate. It also provides for a significantly shorter length of stay. The average length of stay at Tinley is 12 days. This will only pay for an average length of stay of 6 days, which means fewer services, quicker discharges, less discharge planning, less observation of medications before patients are discharged. There's some significant reductions in service that are part of that plan. And what we just learned from Dr. Ferguson is these beds may not be in the Southland. And the whole concept of the initial stakeholders group from 8 years ago, when the state first attempted to close Tinley, when we met not once or twice, as the committees listed in this proposal have met, but when we met over the course of several months and discussed what does the Southland need, what was articulated was the Southland needs a safety net hospital in the Southland. That is not in this proposal. I also, and it's a little hard to discern, in the copy of the RFI I have from the DHS website on page 40, it's not a list of individuals who participated, it's a list of email addresses. So it's hard to tell, and I think Representative Jones was referring to this earlier, it's kind of hard to tell who was part of this. But when I'm looking, I'm not seeing a couple Will County hospitals, and in the past have said they're not interested in a CHIPS process with DHS. They think Tinley does this work very well, and they want them to continue to do the work. So it's very hard for me to tell that everybody was at the table. I know our union was not. And I'm worried that, and this I think is the biggest issue for you guys, we know a budget is going to be voted on likely by the end of May. As has been noted, DHS has set out a very aggressive timetable for getting this all done. And they've already slipped, right? The proposals were due the 16th, now they're due the 20th. And Dr. Ferguson, who I have a great deal of respect for, you know, indicated that she's fairly confident, and that ideally the proposals will be reviewed by the end of April. But is there really going to be a system in place to replace those extremely important services at Tinley Park Mental Health Center by the time you're expected to approve a budget that zero funds Tinley beginning July 1? I think that is the overriding concern. As you've heard, these services are so critical. We would ask you to oppose this closure because there is not, after 8 years, there is not an adequate process in place to replace Tinley.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Michelle Hatcher-Dentman. I'm a representative for INA, which is the Illinois Nurses Association, which services over 1,000 nurses in Illinois. But first of all, I'm a caregiver at Tinley Park Mental Health Center. I see clients with different nationalities and financial background who are at their worst, who, unlike what the young lady said earlier, are a danger to themselves and others and have the inability to care for themselves. They look just like you and I. They have had jobs, they've had homes, and they've had health insurance. They go to private hospitals who, once they're in the emergency room department, call Tinley Park until we accept them. With bad economic circumstances, they have fallen on hard times on the south side of Chicagoland in Region 1 South. We need Tinley Park Mental Health Center to remain open to service the 1,900 plus clients that come to the 50-bed hospital who, just like you and I, have had health insurance and with 2 or 3 months of hard luck could be you or I. We need you to tell Governor Quinn, we need the citizens of Illinois, we need Tinley Park to continue to provide the care and stabilization to serve the people who, with quality care and continuity of care, could be you and I.
My name's Henry Feltz.
I'm sorry, sir. Did you fill out a slip or?
I got a confirmation that I was supposed to talk today.
I'm fine with it if you hadn't. I was just going to say,
I'll introduce myself. My name's Henry Feltz. I'm a registered nurse. I am the staff specialist for the Illinois Nurses Association. I represent Tinley Park, Jacksonville Developmental Center, and Singer Mental Health Centers and the nurses that work there. 6 months ago, we were here listening to the closure language of Tinley Park. I am very saddened by the fact that here we are again going through the same process. Then it was about the fact they didn't have enough money to run the facility, and now it's about saving money for the state. I hope that the governor will at least give our patients two items. One, a cardboard box, and two, a shopping cart, because that's what they're going to need to have shelter and a place to put their personal belongings once they leave this facility. Mental health patients do not go to the community for services. Majority of them will leave the facility, get their medications filled, and then disappear and become homeless. They're not actively in the community seeking services. That's why either they go to the jail system, they get arrested, or they go to the ERs because that's the only way that they get their services. They don't believe in using the community services, even though they're provided. When we discharge our patients, there's no way of telling me that the state's going to be able to, or the Department of Human Services is going to be able to monitor every patient that they release that are going to these outpatient services. There's no way that they're going to, unless they're going to chip them like a dog and let them run around, that's the only way you're going to find out that they're actually using the services that they're spending the money on. Prior to working for INA, I worked at Chester Mental Health Center. So yes, I understand the most critically needs of patients who are violent and all that. When these patients come out of the system, they will go to jail, and they will go back into the system either as unfit to stand trial, which means they will be sent to mental health facilities to become fit to stand trial, or found either NGRI, which means basically means not guilty by reason of insanity, and placed in either the jail system, the correctional system, and that. So please, keep the place open. Illinois, the Nursing Association asked me, the community and its residents demand the governor keep this facility open. Thank you.
Thank you all. Any questions for the members? Thank you. Next are the advocacy organizations, Kyle Lawrence, Mental Health Summit, Marianne Bethos, president of NAMI of South Suburbs of Chicago, Larry Biondi, advocacy coordinator for the Progress Center of Independent Living, Josh Evans, legislative director, Illinois Association of Rehabilitation Facilities, Karen Ward, vice president, public policy for Equip for Equality, and William McNary, co-director of Citizens Action Illinois.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Larry Biondi. I'm the advocacy coordinator at Progress Center for Independent Living in Forest Park. Progress Center services all of suburban Cook County, including Tinley Park. This topic of closing Tinley Park Mental Health Center stirs up strong emotions on both sides of the fence. In his budget address in February, Governor Quinn stated that Illinois must do a better job in providing more community-based services for all people with disabilities. I agree. Furthermore, the recent Williams consent decree validates that people with mental illnesses have the right to live in the community. Closing the Tinley Park Mental Health Center would be one way that Illinois would save money. Another way that Illinois can save money is to invest the money that would go into Tinley Park Mental Health Center and into the infrastructure of providing community-based services so that residents of this facility will have a viable option of where to live if they choose so. Not only for people with mental illness, but for people with all kinds of disabilities. As you know, it's much cheaper for the state to serve people with disabilities in the community. I work with people with mental illnesses and cognitive disabilities who have been institutionalized. and all of them said they preferred to live in the community rather than be institutionalized. They tell me how better their quality of life is by living in the community. They shared with me some horrific stories of when they were locked up in institutions. Now, they are happy members of the community, mainstreaming with the rest of society. They are doing this by receiving adequate community-based services. They vowed never to go back into these institutions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Karen Ward, and I'm Vice President for Public Policy at Equip for Quality, the protection and advocacy system for people with disabilities in Illinois. We appreciate the opportunity to testify before the Commission today. Equip for Quality believes that individuals with mental illness are best served in the community, and we have long advocated for the state to strengthen and adequately fund the community mental health system so that quality mental health treatment and services are readily available. Of course, the reality is that the community mental health system has been seriously underfunded for decades, and this has seriously impacted the transition to the community. When Equip for Quality last testified before this commission regarding Tinley, we stated that closing the center should occur only as part of a comprehensive plan to provide for the needs of the residents, including those with no insurance. Since that time, DMH has submitted a 3-year closure budget and released a request for information for alternatives to services provided at Tinley. We are strongly encouraged by these documents, which contain a number of positive provisions that were previously lacking. However, we have a few concerns. Although the budget contains additional funding for serving individuals who would have been served by Tinley, this increase will be insufficient to expand the quantity and quality of community mental health services to the extent necessary to make rebalancing successful. Illinois law requires the state to redirect all savings from closing Tinley to providing services for individuals with mental illness. In our view, full compliance with this law in the rebalancing effort will go a long way to assuring an adequately funded community-based system. We support DMH's expressed intention to utilize alternative models of care for individuals with mental illness, and we agree that an effective community health system will reduce much of the need for acute inpatient psychiatric beds. However, the services listed as cost assumptions in the budget do not include all the services necessary to fund the system. One such example are psychotropic medications for individuals who are not Medicaid eligible. And of course, there will always continue to be some need for acute inpatient care for individuals who are in crisis. We continue to worry that without agreements that assure that alternative care will be available, individuals will wind up in emergency rooms waiting for way too long for treatment. Such agreements, however, are critical and should alleviate this concern. Finally, Illinois has initiated a process for working together with private hospitals and community mental health providers to assure that individuals with mental illness will receive appropriate treatment at the appropriate time. Equip for Quality is encouraged and applauds this progress and stands ready to work with the state to implement its plans so that individuals with mental illness receive quality mental health care when and where they need it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello. Dear members of CAGFA, my name is Marianne Bethes, president of NAMI South Suburbs of Chicago. I have already told you the story of my daughter being a patient at Tinley Park. However, I want to let you know that she is graduating from St. Xavier's College with a double major bachelor's degree in both psychology and art and plans to go on to grad school to pursue her dream on becoming an art therapist. Had she not had a 3-week stay at Tinley Park Hospital, she may not be where she is today. She really felt safe at Tinley Park Hospital, and after her three-week stay, she continued her rehabilitation at Grand Prairie Services and at Thresholds. I praise community services, and they are dearly needed for rehabilitation, but they cannot care for people living with mental illness who need long-term care. I would like the same chance my daughter received at Tinley Park for the future patients that will need Tinley Park Hospital to help them realize that they can get help and go on to lead productive lives. If they are denied the chance to get care at a local mental health hospital, they will end up in the streets and in our prisons. Can you please answer my question and let me know why it is always the people living with mental illness and disabilities that are subjected to fight for services? Why are these much needed resources receiving cuts in their budget from the state, who needs to provide services, not take away services? People living with mental illness are the most vulnerable population, and yet they are the first people of human beings to have what little benefits that they do deserve taken away from them. The population of citizens in our community living with mental illness or disability are human beings. I am sure if any member of this committee had a member of their family who lives with mental illness or was disabled, and maybe you do have a family member who falls in these categories, would you want them to be denied services? So please convince our governor that this is not a throwaway population, and help us keep Tinley Park Mental Health Hospital open. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello. My name is Kyle Lawrence. I'm appearing on behalf of the Mental Health Summit of Illinois. So first, the summit would like to reiterate that, as always, we're not opposed to a particular closure of a state-operated mental health facility. We acknowledge that better treatment can be achieved through community-based initiatives. But we are opposed to any closure plan that does not account for substantial losses in acute care beds or reinvest the proper amount of funds for alternative treatment opportunities. If the state had a comprehensive plan, we would not be here today. Specifically, our concerns are as follows. First, Tinley Park has a unique role in the Chicago area that must be reflected in the state's closure plan. That unique ability is the ability to serve persons needing involuntary commitment and involuntary medication, because state-employed psychiatrists are staffed on-site and can participate in hearings at the facility. Any plan to close Tinley Park and use private hospital beds must pay for psychiatrists to attend involuntary commitment hearings and provide for transportation of patients to and from court hearings. Second, Tinley Park's patients enjoy important legal rights under the Mental Health and Developmental Disabilities Code that are not currently available to people in private hospital beds. House Bill 5589 has gone some way to alleviate this concern, but not all the way. The right to challenge a denial of admission or discharge decision is still missing from the legal rights of people in these private hospital beds. Furthermore, the current three-year closure plan for Tinley Park that the DHS has provided to us gives no more information than costs saved through closure. Any comprehensive plan must give a detailed account of how the loss of acute care beds in the Chicago area will be compensated. Specifically, we would like to know which private hospitals will provide acute care beds and how much of the funding will be used for these beds. This will require an estimate that has not been given so far of how many beds the state plans to contract for. Lastly, the history of closures kind of demonstrates the need for a comprehensive plan. Past failures have resulted in increased utilization of ERs, with that burden being passed on to the taxpayer and impairing the financial viability of private hospitals, as well as increased burdens on the city and county human services funding and the criminal justice budget. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My name is Josh Evans. I'm with the Illinois Association of Rehabilitation Facilities. We represent service providers of individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities, also mental illness, and we also have providers that serve individuals with substance abuse disorders. I filed a written statement. I don't want to use my time to compile on top of what has been said. Clearly, there's a lot of strong feelings, and understandably so, with this particular debate, and I wish I had the magic word, as anybody does, in solutions to how Illinois gets to what many can consider the
best way of caring for individuals in our state. What I will say is that we have briefly reviewed the RFI, and I believe that once members of this commission and your staff and others have had a chance to really go through it with detail, they'll understand that what you'll see there is a very good attempt that the department has acknowledged is a work in progress of shifting how individuals are served in communities around our state. We support some of the things that are there in terms of acknowledging the need to build certain capacities. Clearly, I think aggressive closure time frame is something that has been brought up numerous times, and that's something that's a concern of ours as well as an underlying budget that seeks to, what I would say, at this rate, the existing system of care in the rest of the state for non-Medicaid individuals, and also cut the capacity of community service providers to serve outside of this region. What I will say is I believe this discussion is a part of the greater budget discussion you all will have the chance to deal with later in this legislative session and beyond. We're on the precipice of major change in Illinois in terms of health care delivery. We need to consider other options that are on the table and others that will be brought forward in terms of looking at how the state expends its resources, because in this state, I don't believe, past being evidence of that, that we can afford to maintain institutional models of care and community models of care, because we don't do a good job in either one if we continue to do so. I could go on. Again, I have filed two previous written statements relative to other closure announcements and also this one, and would enjoy the opportunity of speaking with any individual member of CAGFA directly.
Thank you, sir.
Good afternoon, Chairman Trotter and members of the Commission. My name is William McNary, and I'm the co-director of Citizen Action Illinois. I'm also a member of Cook County President Tony Preckwinkle's Southland Health Advisory Board. This is a board that was established to focus on the health care needs of the residents of the South Suburban area. Citizen Action Illinois is opposed to the closure of Tinley Park. Citizen Action Illinois has a long history of advocating for high quality, affordable health care as a right for all Illinois residents. And most recently, we have been at the forefront of the controversy surrounding the closure of Oak Forest Hospital, which we were also opposed. The effort to close Tinley Park feels like a rerun of a bad movie. Just like Oak Forest, a vital public-run safety net facility for the Southland area is about to be shredded, with the promise that private area hospitals will provide that function. And just like in Oak Forest, there are no actual agreements by these hospitals to provide care. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But here's what happened at Oak Forest. 90% of the patients with physical needs, health care needs, were transferred to Scrozier Hospital in Chicago. And those with mental health care needs were transferred to Tinley Park. The state's plan to use Madden and Maywood and Chicago Reed on the northwest side of the city is no different than the county's plan to use the already overburdened Scrozier Hospital to Oak Forest patients. The stress of making the trip to Scrozier takes a toll on both the patient and their family. We will see the same effect if Tinley Park is closed, where the most severely impaired, mentally ill patients who have the least resources and the most challenges will be transferred to facilities miles and hours away from their homes and their families, away from their community. The closure of Tinley Park is another attack on the health care safety net in an area of Illinois that has no trauma center, has limited public transportation, some of the highest property tax rates in Illinois, some of the highest unemployment rates in Cook County, foreclosure rates at record rate recession levels, and there is a tremendous hunger for comprehensive health care in South Cook County. We've lost 2,000 hospital beds in this area. With the downsizing of patient service at Oak Forest, the closure of Howe Developmental Center, and now the proposed closure of Tinley Park Mental Health Center, Southern Cook County is well on its way to becoming a health care desert. Lastly, let me just say that where your treasure is, so is your heart. If a budget is a statement of values, it is time for us to reprioritize. While the current cash crunch will require budget trims and more efficiencies in state government, abandoning the poor, the sick, the mentally ill in Cook County's most medically underserved area is simply not an option. We urge that you review this plan to take away service for over 2,000 people and reject it.
people who need and suffer from mental health illnesses and need these health care services in the metro area, we urge you to reject this plan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Seeing no questions, I'll go into panel six. Thank you. Sharon Ostrowski, psychiatric nurse, Michelle Hubbard, Tenney Park social worker, and a Dr. Richard Bongard, Tenney Park psychiatrist.
Good afternoon. My name is Michelle Hubbard. I'm a social worker at Tinley Park Mental Health Center. Contrary to belief, I have seen an increase of first-time patients dealing with job loss, family loss, property loss, and at times seriously suicidal. And as far as how dangerous our patients are, I feel that they are more dangerous because they have no insurance, which in itself makes them more hopeless and helpless. We care for patients often with self-inflicted wounds. We've even had patients with rope burns on their necks that have tried to hang themselves and are only there because family members found them. As of today, there are 13 emergency room referrals waiting for inpatient treatment at Tinley Park Mental Health Center. Frontline workers that speak regularly with emergency rooms constantly hear how the hospitals cannot handle the patients that are waiting. Weekly, we receive phone calls from community mental health agencies stating that they will no longer see our unfunded patients. As recently as a couple of weeks ago, we received calls about agencies that are closing later this month. Tinley Park serves unfunded patients, and I have various patient statements. It's extremely obvious that the services are needed. I and others, I'm sure, are confused as to why there is such a rush to close Tinley and a refusal to consider any other options, such as moving us to a smaller facility, rather than totally eliminating the services that are much needed today.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Sharon Ostrowski. I'm a psychiatric RN at Tinley also. I've been in worked in the system for a while. I used to work at the only research hospital, ISPE, that was in the state system. We need to improve the care for mental health. What they seem to be doing is eliminating it. The public community clinics, which already has been mentioned, have already had their funds decreased and therefore have a decreased ability to give needed treatment. The private hospitals are not taking our clients related to no or inadequate insurance or funds. The money supposedly that's being saved is by closing these facilities and DD facilities will in actuality not be a saving. More funds will be needed in the prison system. Without treatment, there will be increased illegal drug use, more crime, more homelessness. Also, there will be increased financial and emotional strain on family members. With treatment, though, they can be productive, tax-paying voters. The direction government and society seems to be taking is back to the 40s and 50s. At that time, there was much more stigma on mental health and mental retardation, DD. This gave poor or inadequate treatment and frustration on part of the families. It also led to many dysfunctional families. We need increased research and improved treatments to fight this backward cycle. Also, the treatment needs to be available to the public sector in the Southland area. Okay, Tinley Park or a facility in this region needs to be open. Could we serve what? Will, Grundy, Kankakee County, South Suburbs, and South Side of Chicago. Another factor, I heard that one of their options the state had was that they're going to use the Reed and Mental Health and Madden beds. Right now, we get clients from those two hospitals when their beds are full. What's going to happen when we're not there? Okay, I'll make it real quick. They also, we need to have a plan in place before they actually close. It's something that is written down, documented, and they have a good transition area. Also, if they want to attract new business economy to this region, it would be very impossible with the way it will be increased homelessness and increased crime rate. I also have another article that was produced in the newspaper, which is pretty much saying the same thing, and also an option that would utilize myself as a contact person, which I will give.
Thank you. Doctor?
Hello, my name is Dr. Richard Bongard. I'm a psychiatrist who's worked in the private sector and also currently employed at Tinley Park. I'm very concerned about the department's latest proposal to close Tinley Park. As a psychiatrist who's worked in both sectors, I can tell you that there really is no alternative to Tinley Park, no matter how many beds you can buy in the community. These patients are not insured, and secondly, our patients are very often, at least initially, very disruptive. And in the past, private hospitals have said they won't serve our patients, no matter how much we give, how much money the state pays for the bed rates. They don't want, it's bad for their business, and they don't want the liability. We also at Tinley work very closely with mental health centers for continuity of care. I'm not sure a private sector does that. I work with Grand Prairie Services, who I have seen through the years have had major cuts in their staff. This is the centers that the DHS says will take over the Tinley closure. However, they've been cut. They really have been cut to the bone. And apparently, the state owes them millions of dollars in back pay, is what I hear. This funding for community services as that has been proposed, taken from the closure of Tinley, will just fill in the service gaps. It probably won't even be sufficient to give us the same amount of care that before the closures occurred, or before the layoffs occurred several years ago. Why would you replace Tinley Park? We give a cost-effective, efficient care. We spend time with the patients. We work on their discharge plans, educate about the medications. We observe them for a period of time, which is necessary for them to for it to soak in. We urge you to reject this closure as a damaging to our state mental health service system and the thousands of individuals who rely on Tinley Park. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Any more questions? Our next panel. Eileen Kramer, Eileen McGrath, Beverly DeYoung, Dr. Quintella Bounds, Roberta, and I'm sorry, Roberta, I cannot read your last name, a supporter of TP Mental Health, and Deborah McCarter.
You want to go first?
You can go. Please.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
To all the commission. My name is Eileen McGrath. I'm a registered nurse for over 60 years. I represent myself and the 153 voters who signed my petition to keep Tinley Park Mental Health Center open. The signatures were obtained at my senior Seton group and by my daughter-in-law, Laura McGrath, at St. Julie Parish. The original copy was sent to the Office of Forecasting and Accountability in Springfield on March 12, 2012. Two other copies were sent to Governor Quinn's office in Chicago and Springfield. I have handed in a copy of these petitions. When it was proposed to close Tinley Park Mental Health Center, A new hospital was promised, and as many people stated, that didn't happen. Mental illness has a biological basis. It is a chemical imbalance in the brains of people. There has been tremendous advances in the treatment of mental illness. Many of the psychotropic drugs mimic the brain neurotransmitters, such as SSRIs, which keep the serotonin in the brain. These drugs correct the chemical imbalance. As it was mentioned, 1,900 people admissions were done in the previous years at the previous hearing. But you know, if they saw 645 patients this year with only 45 beds, it really isn't a residential facility at all. I see it as an acute care facility, and with the laws that they don't want people in the least restrictive environment, they're only treating these acutely ill people, and then they are released. So I think it's imperative that you keep the facility open. As many people have mentioned, the people end up in the street. If they end up in jail, they have a criminal record, and if they get well, they are excluded from a lot of jobs because of a criminal record, and that's terrible that we're making sick people criminals. I'm urging you to keep the Tinley Park Mental Hospital open. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Mel.
My name is Dr. Quintella Bounds. Today I stand before you to discuss the issue of the Safe Facility Closure Act hearing. Tinley Park Mental Health Center. I would first like to inform the Commission that the closing of Tinley Park Mental Health Center without a comprehensive transitional plan for individuals with disability should be a major violation of the Americans with Disability Act. The Civil Rights Act was put in place after years of individuals with disabilities' civil rights being violated. ADA was signed into law to protect the individuals with disabilities. I am a special education major. I am a parent of a child with a disability. I am an advocate. I am a niece who has had relatives to reside in Tinley Park Mental Facility. And I am a resident in this community. It ponders me that there was a committee placed to discuss this issue, but I was not selected. I was not looked for. I, one who have more at stake, was not even talked to. But of course, it's because 80-something of those people had governmental email addresses. So with that being said, I would urge you to listen to us, your constituents, that we want to continue Tinley Park. We do not want it closed. I've heard from the Department of Mental Health. I've heard the words today of them saying transfer, reallocate, hope, planning, will continue, and trying. Unfortunately, I have not heard a comprehensive plan for individuals with disabilities. I truly hope those of you in Congress will rescind the proposal to close Tinley Park. Thank you.
Thank you. Our final group will be Justin Cowley, Tim Stone, Elber Lott from La Roche. Any of those three here?
Sorry we weren't sure how long we'd have to wait. We're about to have. Thank you.
Good evening. The four of us represent L'Arche. We are a community of people with and without disabilities living together in the community, involved in the lives of our neighborhood, our parishes, and the other groups around us. L'Arche began with three men, two of whom had disabilities and had been confined to an institution. L'Arche grew up around the world on the idea that people live best in a situation where they are appreciated and supported within the community. What I'd like to do is present a few of our members to say a few words about why it is important to them that they live in the community. One thing that I've noticed throughout this hearing is that the very people about whom we are all concerned, the people to whom these services are being provided, are the very people who are not at this table. I have seen hardly anyone who represents the population about which we are talking here to speak for themselves. So, could you say a little bit about why it's important to you to live in L'Arche, or what you like about living in L'Arche?
Well, about, you know, my home, for one thing, my friend, my family, and that's where I want to be. So, I'm there now, and here, you know, beautiful.
And what was it like before? Because you did, Elbert, you did have the experience of living in a state institution before. So could you say a few words about what's different living at L'Arche in the community and when you lived before in the institution?
Well, that people were bad. They do work winter time, rain, snow, but now I got my own room, my own friends, big ones in my family. Now, I got my job, do work, I get up for my brothers, and you say beat that.
Yeah, I'm Tim Stone, and I really love living in the community because I feel like I'm a part of the community, and if I was in an institution, I don't think I would be able to go out and be with my friends and stuff, and I just like living in the community because I feel like I'm a part of the community, and I feel like people accept who I am, not because I have a disability at all, because I just feel like if I was closed up in an institution, I feel like that I'm nobody, and I feel like I would be sitting in a room doing nothing, and I'm glad that there's an organization called L'Arche where I am so I can live and live to be independent as much as I could and to live as a family. That's why I like L'Arche, and I just hope that the state could keep our fundings, not cut them out, because we need state funding for each, all of people with disabilities and with mental illness. Thank you.
My name is Justin Cooley. I'm a recent addition to the L'Arche community here in Chicago. I just want to take a second to shed some light on a dynamic that is not often seen in most CILAs. I'm an assistant with L'Arche, so from the state's point of view, I'm a DSP, I'm a service provider. I live in the home, but it's my home as well. These are my roommates, you know. I'm not just there 9 to 5, and it may seem like a radical model of community, but it is, and I know that it would be viewed in that way, but we really seek to, in doing that, we seek to highlight the value of every person, that we all have gifts to share with one another, and we all rely on each other to make it through day to day. And I've only been here, I can only speak to the last 2.5 months here, coming from Texas to Illinois, where funding for disability services is also not in great shape, but just the relationships that I've made with these people just speak volumes, and just being with them day to day, I just feel honored, and it's an absolute privilege to know Tim, Albert, Alex, and Christiane. Thank you.
I'm sure we've way passed our time, so we just wanted to share to you, with you, that living in the community is a viable option, and we believe what people in our community have done, other people with disabilities and mental illness can do as well. There's been a lot of talk during this session about money, and I believe that that is a part of the equation, and so I would put out to you just a request to look at all of the money dynamics. There's been a lot of talk about community providers and whether they'll be willing to provide services without being paid. We are a community provider, and we are one of those who wonder if we'll be able to continue providing services if we are not paid. One question that I would put to you, though, is Tinley Park being paid on time? And if so, were that money released, would that be able to pay community providers on time as well to provide the same services? And a second question that I'd like you to consider is, I'm sure it would be possible to look at the relative cost of supporting someone in Tinley Park and supporting the same person with the same challenges and needs in a community setting. But mainly what we wanted to share with you is that people with disabilities and people with mental illness deserve to live in the community, deserve to live in a home with friends and family, and perhaps an addition to this hearing would be to ask a number of those people, where do you want to be?
Can you identify yourself, please?
Sorry, my name is Alexandra Baig, and I'm part of the L'Arche community that's members Justin, Tim, Albert, and Christiane.
Sure. And just one final question. What does L'Arche stand for?
L'Arche is a French word that means the ark, as in Noah's Ark. It's a place of refuge where people with differences come together.
Thank you all. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Seeing there's no further business, I want to thank all of you for taking the time to come out today. This is a very serious issue that we have to address. Thank you to the department. There will be further discussions. We, as members of CAGFA, have one final meeting, which will be on April 20th at the Murray Developmental Center and 3 o'clock in Centralia High School. With that, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.